Welcome to Docs in Orbit, a podcast for international, independent, creative nonfiction filmmakers. This is Christina Zachariadis. IDFA is upon us, and with over 250 films across six competitive sections, most of which are world premieres, and 10 non-competitive sections, it's just such a robust offering that it can take hours to navigate the program. So that's entirely why I called in Wouter Janssen, founder of Square Eyes, to study the program with me and co-curate a watch list for some recommendations on what not to miss. Square Eyes is a sales and distribution company based in Vienna that specializes in helping outstanding non-mainstream films find the audience and recognition they deserve. With Square Eyes, Wouter represents bold, author-driven features and shorts. He has a very focused catalog of films that have premiered at prestigious festivals and winning multiple awards over the last few years, like main prizes at Cannes, Toronto International Film Festival, Berlin, Locarno, and Clermont-Ferrand. This year, he will be at IDFA representing two titles, Anhel 69, an autobiographical documentary by Colombian filmmaker Theo Montoya, which premiered at Critics Week in Venice Film Festival, and Europe by Philip Scheffner, which premiered at the Berlinale Forum earlier this year and began as a documentary project but turned into a work of state-enforced fiction. Last week, we spent a good amount of time going through each section of the IDFA program and bouncing off titles that caught our attention. And of course, I recorded the conversation to share with you. I hope you enjoy this episode. Without further ado, here's the conversation.
Yo.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited for this conversation. The Google Doc really solidified how excited I am.
How early did you get up? Because I was working in it and I saw you were already typing in it. And I thought, like, it's quite early, I think, on your side.
Yeah, well, I do my best thinking in the morning. So I tried to wake up at 5:30 this morning, but I was a bit late.
Shame on you.
I know.
I'm already happy when I'm awake at 8. So it's,
yeah. Oh, okay. You're more of a, well, I mean, it kind of suits you, though, to be an evening bird for the cinemas.
I mean, I also sleep in cinemas constantly. So it's like, I just like sleeping a lot. I think that's more it.
Well, I was actually going to ask you how you manage watching so many films as a distributor and the overstimulation that happens. Because for me, festival going, I have to prepare myself and then I get so blurry, out of touch with reality, lose the sense of who I am. Like, it's really...
I think I hardly do this anymore. Like, at festivals, watch that many films anymore, I think, because I'm usually watching so much in advance. So yeah, so it's kind of nice to like now have a festival where I don't have to do anything before I go into it, where it will just be running around again. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I mean, just to introduce you a little bit, Wouter Janssen joining the podcast. First time on Docs in Orbit, but we've spoken quite a few times because there was a lot of overlap in the films that we've gravitated towards at Docs in Orbit. Mm-hmm. And had the chance to cross paths with you earlier at Berlinale, and you had some great recommendations there. And I thought it would be really wonderful to get your input on IDFA, since it's a really overwhelming program.
Yep.
And yeah, I just kind of get advice from the expert and experienced festival goer. Thank you for making time for this.
Yeah, looking forward to the chat.
Maybe we start with your relationship with film and how you came about becoming a distributor.
Yeah, sure. So I kind of rolled into film, like the film industry, in 2008. I've always been interested in film, of course, but I was doing more things in music back then. And then through my studies, I did an internship at a short film festival in the Netherlands, Go Short. That was their first edition that they were preparing for 2009. So I started there in 2008. And I kind of sticked around after that. So I became like program coordinator, then head of programming, and I was part of the selection team for the competition programs there. And I did that for a decade, so till 2018, 19. Along the way, I kind of started noticing that a lot of short films that I would see in the Netherlands, I wouldn't see them that much traveling internationally. So because of that, I started helping filmmakers out with the festival distribution of their films. So that was in 2011, I think, that I started doing that. And then in 2012, I started this company called Some Shorts. And over the years, like I started doing more international titles. Then a lot of directors that I worked with started doing features. So for instance, one of the directors that I worked with was Guido Hendricks. I worked with his third and fourth year film at the Film Academy, Escort and Among Us. And then he made his first feature, Stranger in Paradise, which I then started helping out with. And that ended up being the opening film of ITFA in 2016. So kind of the first titles that I worked with in feature also kind of had like a good start of their career. So then I was thinking about like, okay, what do I want to go into sales really with films? Or what is like, if I have a profile, like what would that profile be? So I was just looking really at films that I liked. And I kind of noticed that the films that I gravitated towards are more film festival films and often didn't have sales agents connected to them. And I was thinking like, okay, maybe this is a space where I can focus on with the company. And so then I, in 2020, I changed the name to Square Eyes and really started looking like really for this type of more challenging work, more experimenting with the visual language or the approach to narrative, and usually also somewhat political, I think, in the topics they deal with.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense, sort of, when I look at the lineup of films that you represent, that you got a start in shorts, because shorts, I find it to be like a little bit more of an experimental format where filmmakers can think about form differently and the politics of film and the possibilities that could exist.
I think this like this freedom that the short formats offers is something that I'm really interested in. And while thinking about kind of like what my line is, I think like I'm also attracted to films that are not perfect. Sometimes I see a documentary where I really think everything makes sense, but I like it when maybe a film is a bit more rough, when it has some things that are not completely working or something, but that you really feel like a director is taking a chance at something. So I like it when I just see that there's a bit of risk being taken, I think.
That was 2018.
2020 that I launched the company Square Eyes. Yeah, so January 2020, in hindsight, not the best timing.
Yeah, no kidding. How's that been?
I mean, I'm still here. No, like I think with the films that I work with, we know that festivals are already like a super vital part of what we're doing. But in the end, we managed and we didn't have that many titles that year. It was more like I think that it was difficult with for directors to kind of like what is going to happen, and nobody could really see what was coming. But besides that, for me, it was also good because everything went online, and so I could really be really present at a lot of festivals because I could just do it from my home. So I was at every pitching event, which now would not be possible anymore travel-wise. So it was kind of a good period to introduce myself as a company.
Yeah, I'm sure now a lot of these places where you were present for the pitching forums, these films are starting to enter into the festival circuit. So you have a lot of insight when it comes to which films are ones to keep an eye out for. So I'm going to benefit from this. I'm going to tap into all of your knowledge in just a bit when we go over the IDFA program. It's huge. It's so huge. And it really has something for everyone in there.
Yeah, I mean, like ever since Orwa became the artistic director, like there's been new sections there. They've been a bit more stricter with for more sections, you need an international or world premiere. So they have a bit more new films. They have since, I think, since last year, this Envision competition, which should be a bit more experimental work. So, yeah, but it's like if I, it's what you said before, like you're really tracking films now, you're really paying a lot of attention. So now looking at ITFA, I'm like, oh yeah, I know a lot of these titles. But when I started going to ITFA, I didn't know these titles because I wasn't looking at all the international festivals. And then it's really like, okay, if I just want to catch all the biggest titles of the year, I can just go to ITFA for a week and just binge watch everything. So that's really nice. I think in the Netherlands, it has like a really strong place. And is because of that, probably also such an audience festival, because you can just really see like, okay, what is going on right now in documentary and catch everything there. Yeah.
So what is bringing you to IDFA beyond just sort of the fact that it's such an important festival? You have films that you're representing there?
Yeah, so we have two features this year that are playing there. One that is still quite new, Anel 69, by Theo Montoya. That's a Colombian, French, Romanian, German co-production that premiered earlier this year in Venice in the Critics Week, and last week won the main prize in Doc Leipzig.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that was a nice closing of the festival, and so that will be in the Best of the Fest at ITFA.
Yeah, let's start with Best of Fests then.
Yeah.
Since that is sort of a section that is a catch-all of films that have really done well in other festivals, NHEL 69?
NL69.
NHEL
Yeah. Yeah.
69, yeah. Tell me a little bit about what the film is about.
Yeah. So I met Theo for the first time in Cannes in 2020 because he did a short film called Son of Sodom. And the short film is about him doing a casting for a film project. One of the people that does an audition, like he's kind of like mesmerized by this person. And that person dies quickly after the audition. They were going to make like a kind of a B movie with all these friends from him from the queer community in Medellin, Colombia. And it's more like a portrait of queer youth in Medellin. So he's really talking about like this city ruled by violence, people growing up without a father figure, drug cartels and stuff like this is kind of the image and the queer community in there. And Theo himself deals with a lot of stuff through cinema. So he's again, like the film kind of has like all these fictional elements in it when he's talking about his film, and he's also making his films within this film in a way. And then through that, he's talking about his friends group that is there and who are dealing with deaths, drugs, and all these things. So it's in the beginning, starting watching it, I thought like, oh, this will be so heavy, but it's really hopeful and warm in a way, also because it's really his friends group. And it has this B movie element is really in it. It has kind of a vampire genre element going through it. So it's quite a punk approach to this topic, but it's really yeah, it's just like a really young and fresh film, I think.
Yeah. And the trailer, even though it is sort of like the way you're describing it as this B movie kind of aspect, the trailer looks like so really beautifully polished in terms of the cinematography and the visual aspects of the film. Like I didn't realize initially that it was actually a documentary.
Yeah, like I think in the trailer we also use some other elements, but I think if you watch the film, it really has also like really straightforward kind of documentary elements. But it's definitely this blend that sometimes it's also difficult to distinguish like where are we now in the fiction part and what is the documentary part. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So that's Anhel 69. Is there anything else in this section that you can recommend?
Yeah, so I was going through the program, and again, what you said earlier, like it's kind of overwhelming. So I just kept on noting down titles that I know people will like, but that I also know that you guys already touched upon a couple of times, because a lot came from Berlinale Forum, for instance. And so I was thinking a bit about titles that I haven't come yet coming up yet. So one of them is Naked Gardens by Yvette Lucas and Patrick Bresnan. I think it premiered in Tribeca. And I know them through their short films. So they did this trilogy on this small community in the US in Florida. They had a feature called Pohokee in Sundance. This is their newest film, which is in like a nudist resort in the US. And from the beginning, it's like kind of like a funny and warm portrait of these quirky people that organize everything there. But slowly it kind of also dives into the fact that a lot of people live there because it's cheaper to live there. But then a lot of them have traumas and things like this. But besides that, it's just like a really fun and warm film. And I think Patrick and Yvette are always really good in everybody just comes across like super at ease. So this is definitely like a more easy watch. So yeah, so that would be a recommendation.
Yeah, I can't believe I missed this. This is like a new title to me. I can't believe that it's not been on my radar. It sounds really funny. And it says in the synopsis that residents go about their business, play tennis, do laundry, eat meals, make repairs. Is this all naked?
Yeah, there's one scene in the film when I first was watching it, and a guy is using like an electric saw and he's naked, and I'm just like waiting for something to happen. I don't know, it's not supposed to be a suspenseful film, but when they are just doing manual labor, you're just like, why is this happening naked?
Okay, cool. Yeah. And in this section in Best of Fests, I do have to recommend some of the films that we've been tracking at Docs in Orbit. I absolutely think it's a great opportunity to make sure to watch All That Breathes, which I think has a really, really high chance of making the shortlist for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful film. And also Foragers by Jemana Mana, which premiered at Vision Surreal. And
Yeah.
then Geographies of Solitude is a really, really great one that I would also add to the list by Jacqueline Mills,
Yeah.
also explores ecology
Yeah, this
and
is one that we passed on when we saw it, and I think it's the film I've been regretting most the past year, because I've just been, I think when we spoke in Berlinale, this was also one of the films that I pointed out, and I've just been seeing it popping up everywhere. But it's really really lovely film, and I think like it's quite accessible, but I really like how also kind of they talk about what cinema is and kind of the physical means of cinema. So they have like nature and the sound of nature also kind of become part of the filmmaking process. I think she at one point also buries film print and kind of sees what the effect of that is on the film print, if I remember correctly. So it's like, yeah, it's really interesting film.
yeah, it's very, it's really a special film. Should we go to Paradox? Because I think I see Europe there, which is by Philipp Schaffner, and that is a film that you also recommended to me at the Berlinale, and I fell in love with it, loved it. We've talked about it several times on this podcast. How did this film come across your table?
Yeah, so Europe is produced by Pong, which is the production company of Philipp and Merle. And so first off, I think like Philipp is just like a super interesting filmmaker. He's been doing documentary a lot, already did like a retrospective in New York around his work. So this is his first fiction film. So that was something interesting. And then I think like it's again a film with like a quite clear political stand, but done in a really artistic manner. From the beginning, I also knew that it wouldn't be an easy film because it's quite a slow and not easy for an audience. But I think like kind of the statement that he makes with the story is just super interesting. And then again, why it's also in Paradox, kind of how it started off as a documentary project and then became a fiction project because of more like legal reasons, I found really interesting. So I would not so much say that this is really a hybrid film, but really the origin is super documentary based. The main character is also playing her own story. So that's something that I then also find really interesting, really the kind of how it came to be the project.
Yeah, I think that's also the reason why I was so captivated by this film when I first saw it. So basically, Europe, for those that might not know what it's about, how would you like even, what's the log line for it? I mean, yeah, I'll hand it to you.
So we follow Rim. She's from Algeria, living in a neighborhood in France called Europe. And then at some point in the film, she loses her residency permit. And then we kind of, in a visual way, they act this out. So in the first chapter, she suddenly is not part of society anymore. So even though you see people still interacting with her, she's not present anymore on screen. So we don't see her. And then in the last chapter, suddenly almost everybody else disappears from the film and only she is present with, I think, like one or two other characters. And then she's more acting out her dreams. So it's really a reflection on what it means if somebody loses this permit in a country where they are living and what that consequence is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also really engaging. Like, I mean, it's so, like, and what's really engaging about it is all of the subtleties in the film. And to watch it on a big screen, it's really a great chance to watch this film. So it's in the Paradox section, and which is the section that has a little bit more of these sort of like experimental films that
Yeah, also more towards artist moving image almost, I think. Yeah.
Anything else in this section?
Yeah, so I think a film also was also in Berlinale, and I would say like has maybe some parallels with Europe in its approach, would also be A Little Love Package. It takes place in Vienna on the last eve, I think, that smoking is allowed in cafes. That's at least in the beginning how it was pitched. The film goes a bit away from that, I think, but it's actually also a film that I would describe actually as a fiction film. But in its origin, because I came across the project also when it was pitched in Vision de Réal. So it has like documentary elements, but really reads more as a fiction film, I would say, than a documentary. Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised to actually see it in the selection because for me it's so associated as a fiction. But anyway.
Yeah, but it was the same with Jura because I remember that the programmers from ITFA saw it in Nyon and that I then had a chat with them because they saw it without a Q&A from Philip. And whenever you have a Q&A of him there, suddenly everything falls in its place. But when you see it kind of without a backstory, it's sometimes then you have this reaction like you now have to A Little Love Package. And then sometimes you hear like, oh, no, but it's documentary because of this, this, and this. And then it's suddenly like, oh, yeah, but then we can program it. So I think with Europe, if Philip is there, nobody will doubt why it's
Yeah.
there because he's so good in kind of motivating the reasons. So.
And in the case with Europe, the reasons why it takes the form of a fiction is strictly political. And he uses that in the film. There's no pretense that he's not creating a fiction film.
Yeah, it's really part of the DNA.
So Europe, A Little Love Package. I was gonna add in there The Unstable Object 2 by Daniel Eisenberg. It's a film that I have not seen, but I'm really interested in the synopsis because it basically observing manufacturing process in three different factories, gloves, luxury accessories, and jeans in Turkey. So it's labor intensive. That's a good way to describe it. And it just won, I think it
The
had
main
won
prize in
the main,
FIDE-MASE.
yeah. Have you seen it?
No, it was one of those. Okay, so watching a 3.5 hour film in a festival for me is impossible because I have like crazy FOMO. So just locking myself in a cinema for so long, I find impossible to do. But then again, this is the type of film that I want to see in the cinema because otherwise at home, I usually am not really able to sit down and concentrate for so long. But I found it interesting because I feel like it's actually a super classical documentary, like just observation, and then it's also in paradox. So that kind of makes me interested to see like, okay, what is the experimental nature of this? Because it feels like super classical, observational type of documentary. And then also being 3.5 hours, but the fact that it's like sound and everything will play a big part in it kind of makes me curious to see it in a cinema.
Yeah, I'm just looking also. I think it was in the current section. Yeah, it was in the current section at New York Film Festival. So it is finding its place in sort of these more experimental areas of programming. How about we move to the short program?
Yeah, so this is actually the section I think I saw the most films from. So I think maybe like the first film that I wanted to point out, A Robust Heart from Martin Benchimol, which is produced as part of Elemental. So Elemental is this scheme where they ask directors to make films around an element. And so A Robust Heart is around, I'm now forgetting it. It had a different title before, but
Butchers in Argentina.
yeah, it's a focus on butchers in Argentina, but I think it's around like blood or something plays a part in it. But it's kind of a butcher's talking about what they're doing. And it's quite a nice film about how it kind of it talks about family a lot and how the film slowly develops. It's quite short. I think it's like just a bit above 10 minutes. And Martin is a super interesting person also to follow because he will also have in the Works in Progress a project, a feature called The Castle, which will probably be like a major festival hit next year. So a robust heart would be a good one to catch. And like Elemental is a really interesting scheme also to follow because they have a couple of really interesting directors that are doing films for them. So they will also, I think, be popping up at festivals throughout the next years.
Cool. So a robust heart in the shorts. I think I could actually add to that. One that popped for me was Soma Tatlua. It's by Rodrigo Ribeiro Anandrim from Brazil. It's about 15 minutes. It's an international premiere, and I have not seen this film at all, but I looked at the trailer and I was just really captivated by it. It's this gorgeously shot, I think on 16 millimeter film. And it has this like real like ritualistic feel and vibe to it. And I also just like really love 16 millimeter films. It's around a ritual that happens in Brazil. So it looks like it's gonna be one that has a little bit of a different beat than some of the others.
Yeah.
So that's why this one really, really popped for me. I don't know, do you know anything about it? 'Cause it's an international premiere, so it must have been somewhere else before.
Yes, it's Brazilian. It will probably have played in Rio, I think,
Okay.
which was recently. But I also didn't know the title. But now, again, looking at the synopsis and the image, I think it sounds super interesting and definitely also a bit more experimental. And then it's also paired with Foragers if you want to watch it. So you have like two in one.
Yes, that's a really good pairing because Foragers is really about land and indigeneity, and it is in its making. Foragers is an act of protest, and this film also feels like it has that same reason for existence.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to catch two films on our watch list at once. So back to you.
Yeah. I'm looking at the titles that I wrote down. I think like maybe Still Static is a nice film to recommend from Adam Kaplan. It's a film that was made at Frenois. You kind of have like two people describing an event they were present at and how it was represented in the media and kind of talking about effect that it had on them. And during the film, we never really find out what it was. Like one of the people talking about it, he filmed everything and he was the only person filming this. So he's kind of reflecting on that. When I was talking to the director, I heard actually what the event was, but it's not really mentioned in the film. Like it feels a bit like maybe it's a terrorist attack or something. And then I found out that actually, because it sounds somewhat straightforward, but then I found out that it's actually, he just had like all these different eyewitness accounts to all these different events and kind of merged them together, which is really interesting. And the fact that I couldn't really place what it was about also kind of says something about these eyewitness accounts that it's for like a lot of events, you could almost use the same, what they're saying is quite similar, but it's really interesting. Like it feels quite straightforward, but then again, when he's talking about it, the film suddenly gets like all these layers. And I think the fact that you don't know what it's about also builds this great tension throughout. So I think that's a really kind of slow burn type of film that the same like what you said about Europe, like it's one of these films that after watching it, I think you can also kind of revisit, and it's something that I've been thinking about more after seeing it for the first time.
Okay, cool. So that's Still Static by Adam Kaplan. It's a
Yeah.
French 22-minute short film world premiering. Very cool. You know which one maybe we can talk about next in this section is Away by Ruslan Fedotow. You had that on your list.
Yeah.
Last year he had a film in, I think it might have been the, was it in the competition, the main competition section?
Yeah, and it won the First Appearance Award, and I think Best Cinematography, if I'm not mistaken. Where We Are Headed was the title.
Yes,
Yeah.
I still think about some of the images from that film, actually. So basically, he films in Where We're Headed, he films in a subway stations in Moscow during New Year's Eve. And it's very observational. But there's some political undertones in it, and Putin makes an appearance. And the first image of that film, I don't know if you remember, but it's like
Yeah.
a 50 millimeter shot, portrait shot of a boy. Being carried by somebody. And it's just this like really tender moment of softness, and then you get into this like really cold, austere, chaotic environment of the metro stations in Moscow. And so now he has a short film.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, like, then the ending, because that's the scene probably that stuck most with me, is then again this older couple in the subway while we're getting outside of the underground, and you have like the sun in the background setting, if I remember correctly. So it's kind of a nice like opening and ending with like a young boy and an older couple. But yeah, so the new one, Away, so it's shot in Hungary, and it's actually about some Ukrainians who are now there. So they follow like two younger people who are working with kids that have fled Ukraine and are now living there. So it's kind of a quite tender portrait of these. I want to say that it's two people now living in Hungary and how they deal with what is going on. Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. So it's super different from where we are headed, but it's yeah, it works really well. Like, I think it's just like where we are headed. I think like what a similarity maybe is that like he's just able to kind of capture this tenderness, I want to say. Just this tenderness, how he is able to film the people he's capturing, and kind of how natural they come across. A really nice, maybe a bit more accessible than where we are headed. So that's also something that I would definitely recommend. Yeah.
Should we move on to another section, or are there others in this section?
Yeah, maybe like just a shout out, I think, then also for The Silence of the Banana Trees from Ineos Kaka that I saw some time ago, which is a film that I would just definitely recommend watching in the cinema. Like, it's a bit more of like an observation of it's like a father-daughter relationship, but stylistically he does like really interesting things with music and sound. So that's something that if you have the chance to catch it also in the cinema, that's definitely worthwhile.
So let's move on to the next competition section for immersive nonfiction. Have you had a chance to look at gems that are in here?
I had a chance to look at it, but I have to say, like, the Doc Lab films are something that I standard miss out on. Like, it's often that I hear people talking super enthusiastic about these projects, but also often because it's like a smaller amount of people that can go in and you really have to book it in advance. This is something that I just end up always missing out on.
Well, let me make a strong recommendation then. If there's only one that you can do, I would say In Pursuit of Repetitive Beats. So this is by Darren Emerson. It's coming out of the UK. It was already, I think, at BFI London. It's about rave culture in 1989 England. So if you think about, I want to say Underworld was part of it. And basically it's about what, 35 minutes, and you're hunting around the country in search of illegal raves over the course of one night in 1989. So I think that's all you have to really say. I mean, I couldn't even get through the trailer of this, and I was like, "Oh my God, where can I book tickets?" I was like halfway through. I was like, I want to be there now.
For me, it's just like the idea of watching a 35-minute VR film, I already find like daunting.
But it's music, though,
Yeah, but
and you're
like
on a hunt.
I think this is just my like with VR, I always found it difficult to watch it for a long time. But because of that, I never do it.
Oh, well, the funnest I ever had at IDFA in 2017 was this one. I think it was LCD Sound System. They had a VR, and I think I might have done that for maybe not 35 minutes, but I mean, if you really think about it, though, if you really, really think about it, most of your time, well, maybe not most of your time because you're going to be doing a lot of networking and going to a lot of pitch forums and stuff, but most of my time will be spent sitting down in a cinema. And so this gives you 35 minutes of like, I don't know, like a hunt for something else, maybe a little bit of movement and dance. So.
Yeah, like to tie in with this, I was now just browsing to the program, and I also saw this in this section, Slumberland, which is a Swedish performance, which is actually dealing with our attention economy and how the idea that we constantly have to be productive, and this film is dealing with taking a break from it. So, like here, I also read the sentence. This group VR experience invites you to get some rest, a radical proposition. And it's like a guided sleep. So I think like this could be something maybe just for me to have a break in between. But I really like, I find it interesting that it's really radical to do something like this, that it's actually more like you're not super active in it, which I just find really interesting. Like I was also, I'd read this book, How to Do Nothing from Jenny Odell, which also like really deals with this fact of like taking a break and that not everything has to be productive. So I find it really interesting as a performance to do something around this.
Okay, cool. Let's add that to the list. Let's go to Irfan stage. Arcadia Live. And I feel like that one's gonna probably be a pretty good bet because the trailer for this also looks incredible. And it's a portrait of the British countryside. And it says it has a hypnotic soundtrack written by Adderley Utley from Portishead and Will Gregory of Goldfrapp, who will perform live. So I think it's gonna be exciting.
Yeah, I'm curious what this exactly is because I know that because I know Paul from like years ago, he did a film called Believe and Until the River Runs Red, and then we did a retrospective around him at the festival I used to work with. He did a film
Oh.
called For Those in Peril, a feature. So, and I know that he did this project Acadia, that this started in 2017 or something, but I think only as a film. So now I see that it's live, and then the fact that it's somebody from Portishead and Goldfrapp would also make me curious to see this live on stage.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting about it is this mix of like archive with contemporary music and this like kind of, hypnotic blend of those two.
Yeah, and Paul is definitely like with his films already, it's definitely had this hypnotic, like he's super good in atmosphere. So I can imagine that this will work really well.
Yeah, so Arcadia Live by Paul Wright in the Irfan stage.
Yeah.
So cool. Actually, and in this section, there's also Between Nothingness and Infinity, I Began to Weep by Maxime
Jean-Baptiste.
Jean-Baptiste.
Yes. Yeah, that's Maxime is a director I'm working with right now. He did a short film, Listen to the Beat of Our Images, a year ago that also played everywhere. That one he did together with his sister, Audrey. And then this year, he did a film that premiered at Forum Expanded in Berlin called Moon O, which I am working with. So that's a short film, and I knew he was working on a feature, and he told me like, oh yeah, I'm doing this performance at ITFA, and I was going over what it's about, and it's actually film footage coming from the project he's developing now, the feature. It sounds super intense, like it's about his cousin who got murdered at the age of 18 while at a birthday party. And then it's like video images, interviews to kind of create a picture of his cousin. Yeah, so it just sounds like something that like as a film will be quite heavy, but I can imagine just seeing this like live that it suddenly gets this dimension that makes it much more impactful, even.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious to see this. And I think he's performing it twice. During ITFA.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is definitely something that I would that I'm going to try to catch.
Yeah, I think for me too, I think because his previous film really was just outstanding. So I really trust his work. Like I feel like it's a somebody that I am now following and really interested in seeing what more he does. So
Yeah.
I like this idea that he's tapping into like something very close to him. I don't know if is that a theme of his
Yeah,
in his other works?
the short that I'm working on now is about his father, and His father was involved in this French film that was shot in French Guinea, and it talks about how these filmmakers went there and then just took filmed this film and then left again. So also this kind of colonization of images. So it's also kind of this violence that is embedded in these images. And again, it uses a lot of archive material from that film and something that was shot during that time. So that's also again something this blending of images of more like his monologues reflecting on it. It's also something that's part of this. So it's definitely part of his process, I think, and kind of his approach to film.
Awesome. So I think those two round out our IDFA on stage selections. I want to also be very cognizant of time, so that's why I'm going to race through these. If there's others we might add to the watch list, we'll post it online. But let's get to the Envision competition and the international competition. Why don't you, so why don't you take us through some of your picks
Yeah,
here?
so I have to say, with the international competition and the Envision competition, I don't know anything, like almost. So it's really for me, when the program got published a week ago, I was also just discovering all these films. And with the Envision competition, I think the one that stood most out for me is How Dare You Have Such a Rubbish Wish from Manya Akbari, which is an Iranian UK production, using footage from Iranian films that were made up until just after the Islamic Revolution, and that all have been banned. And through this footage, she's kind of talking about also women's repression. So with that, it's right now super current, of course. But I really, the fact that all these films are then also made by male directors. So even when women were more free in what they could do, it's still like a male gaze that we see in this material. So I'm just really interested in kind of like how she is going to bring that point across, like kind of how she builds a narrative out of that, and also how she's able to then, as a female filmmaker, kind of turn that narrative around again and put it through her gaze. So I'm really curious to discover this film. And it's also a filmmaker that I'm really following for a long time, Mariam Tafakkori, also Iranian filmmaker based in the UK, is also doing a lot with like Iranian film lately. And it's, I think there's like a lot to discover in that. So this one was definitely one that stood out for me.
Okay. Yes, this is also very much on my list for exactly those reasons. I'm really curious about this gazing back, of the male gaze. But it also feels like it's a film that isn't made only for this moment because of this moment. From what I can gather about Mania Akbari is that she's worked for many years in the film industry, in the Iranian film industry, and I kind of love that she's making this film. And so I'm really interested in watching it and engaging with it. I'm sure it was not an easy film to make, but I'm sure it's also a big scream that we all need to hear. So, anything else in Envision?
For me, it's also just like there's a lot of films that I want to discover. Like it's like mainly I'm also curious to kind of get a feel for like what they are trying to do with this section, like where the experimentation is. And so like another film that I was curious to that I hope to watch soon is A Light Falls Vertical by Eftimia Simfragaki, which is like she's f making a portrait of a violent person, and he's kind of talking about this, asking her to make this film about him, and through that she also reflects on things that have happened in her life. So I just like kind of the proposition of this films, I find of this film sounds very interesting. I think this could be really something strong.
Yeah, I actually haven't heard of her work before. I think it might be her first film as
Yeah, it's her
well.
first feature.
Yeah. The other one that just quickly that I was like, oh, this looks really cool, is Invoked. It's a Serbian film, and it basically is 10 years after the death of Tito, looking back at all of those who became president and what happened to Yugoslavia. Excerpts from talk shows, news broadcasts, campaign meetings. So that one sounded really interesting. And it's also a thread. I noticed that there's a pathway around Yugoslavia this year in IDFA's programming. So there's a large body of work representing the former Yugoslavian
Yeah.
region.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think Luca won something in Nyon in Vision Surreal as well this year with his film Without.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, it was a mid-length
Yeah.
film.
Yeah. 34 minutes or something, I think. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so I think three for Invi, but honestly, this was a really difficult section to get through because there were so many. There were really like so many. I'm like, oh, and this one, and this one, and this one. But in
Yeah.
amount of time that we have, and we should really talk about the international competition section. There's 13 films here. And where should we start?
Yeah, there's a couple of like bigger names in there, like Jon Bang Carlsen, Peter and Petra Lataster, and of
Cool.
course Mila Trajilic, me butchering the name. Those were the names that I knew, but besides that, it was again like for me like a lot of titles that I had to discover, and also a lot of titles that I actually hadn't. Maybe it's also because I started in 2020 going to these forums, but I hadn't seen many of these titles kind of pass by. So for me, this was also kind of a discovery. And I think Mila's new film I had seen in a lab before, and it's two films. So this is the second one, and the first one premiered at Toronto this year. So you have non-aligned scenes from the Labudovich reels. That's the one that's premiering at ITVA. But then you also have Cine Guerrillas scenes from the Labudovich reels, and that's the one that premiered at Toronto.
But I think that's also playing here as well.
Yeah. You can watch both. No, so that's something I'm curious to again, like archive film dealing with this non-aligned movement. Because I don't know that much about it, I'm also just really curious to kind of find out more about it.
Yeah, same here. So non-aligned scenes from the Labudovich reels. The filmmaker is familiar. She did The Other Side of Everything back in 2017, and that won a ton of awards.
Also ITVA.
Was it a world premiere at IDFA?
Yeah, I think it won the main competition at ITVA that year. I think the non-aligned movement, it's like a group of countries kind of been binding together because the world started becoming like, I think around the Cold War, that it was these really two power structures. So that countries around the world started this non-aligned movement to build one bloc together as opposition of that. So it was a lot of countries in Africa. And I think that's also where the film mainly takes place, like a lot of the material that came from there. But it's
Oh, that's
like,
right. Yeah, images of Africa and Asian re liberation movements,
yeah.
and revolutionary leaders. So, but it is the cameraman of Tito that
Yeah.
filmed all of these, the birth of the non-aligned movement that was happening in African and Asian countries.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool. For me, the other one was Paradise by Alexander Abaturov.
Yeah, that's the one that stood out the most for me as well, to be honest.
Yeah. Documenting of villagers in Siberia combating a huge wildfire set in this governmentless territory in Siberia. I don't know. I had a really strong visceral reaction to reading the synopsis.
If you read the synopsis and you see the still they are using, this just feels like a film you want to see in the cinema. Like I hope it won't disappoint, but like in my head, I already see the sound and everything of these landscapes and then these huge fires, that it will just be super nice to see in the cinema. So yeah, this is also just one that stood out for me, like just that it visually will probably be super strong. And this idea of that the government just kind of pulls their hands of a location because they're like, it will cost more to help out than the damage that will happen. I find just such an interesting approach to it.
Yeah, that was, yeah. So basically, just to do justice to the synopsis. So what I'm getting from it is that in the basically there's these extreme heat waves that are happening in northeastern part of Siberia in this small village, and there's no effort within the government to combat these forest fires, so villagers are forced to go at it themselves.
But just like this, then also like the sentence, the camera accompanies the men as they enter the fire zone to quench the flames of what they call the dragon. I'm already like seeing this, how this must look.
Yeah, definitely. And I did a little bit of research on Alexander Abaturov, this filmmaker, and he had a previous film called The Sun. It's about Russian army barracks in Siberia, and it premiered at the Berlinale Forum earlier this year. So definitely thematically, he's dealing with this location. Cool. So that's two in the international competition. I'll let you pick the third.
Let's see. I think we both wrote down Colette and Justin. A friend of mine is staying over now for Viennale, and she also said like this film in the international competition is the one that I want to watch because apparently the previous film of the director, which was a mid-length film, I think, which premiered in Fijon, was really strong. Trouble Sleep. So this new film set in the DR Congo. And like I had to think a bit like of like books by Jonathan Franzen. Like it's this a family story, but then on in the background of this family story are all these like historical milestones that were happening in this country. So telling this family story, we kind of also reflect on history that was happening at the same time. So I find the approach just really sounds super strong. And again, I don't know this that much about the country, the fact that it's also colonized by Belgium, and the film also deals a lot with that. I'm just really interested again. Like it's again one of these films that I think like the approach to it narratively is super interesting, and it's just something that I don't know a lot about. So I would also just love to see it just to get more on that.
Colette and Justin, the trailer is beautiful. It looks very patient. It's a personal film. It lives within this relationship between the filmmaker and his grandparents. And he gets them to kind of reflect on their lives from this very complex political period of time, the early years following Congo's independence. All right.
It's so much films, like we already skipped so much now. It's really, it has such a big program.
It is such a big program. I don't know if we're helpful at all in this because it's still too much to get through, even with these recommendations. Yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll leave to you if you want to just highlight a selection to close with.
Like I'm because we didn't mention a lot of films. Okay, maybe like maybe not one film, but just like definitely have a look at the top 10 that Laura Poitras made because I think there's a lot of super interesting films in there. Also, because I find it quite interesting, I don't know, she will probably have a talk or something, but I just find it interesting the films that she picked, kind of knowing the type of work that she makes, because I find it quite, it's more that she does has a lot of political films in her top 10. A lot of stuff that's well known, like Shoah, La Jetée, Territoires de Folies, but I'm quite curious to see Project Crossroads, which is about these atomic testings that happened in the US in 48. I think this is documentation by the army itself. So I'm quite curious to see that. This is something that I would be curious to see because I think in these top 10s, you always see films that you just don't get the chance to often see in the cinema.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, first of all, I should say that I'm probably the biggest fan of Laura Poitras. She's hugely political and very influential in terms of like for American audiences, I would say. She's a strong voice, a voice that we really, really do need, and I admire her courage in the films that she does. And I'm not surprised to see titles from the US Department of Energy on her top 10. I think it's a really brave top 10. It's kind of a little rebellious. So, yeah, so I think this is going to be like really, really cool to engage with. I'm
Yeah,
excited for it. Thank you. That's a lot. It's really a lot. It's going to be a big edit for me, but I'll take it on, and I really, really appreciate it.
It was a nice chat. Yeah, it's always easy when the time just kind of flies by. So
Yeah.
yeah, it was nice to
Okay.
do. Hope to see you in one of the VR sessions. Let's see if
Yeah.
I can make
For
time for
sure.
that.
Thanks for listening. The 35th edition of IDFA will take place from November 9th to the 20th in Amsterdam. And you can catch our full watch list, including additional titles, on docsinorbit.com, where you'll also find a playlist of episodes to coincide with films featured in the Best of Fest section, including Jemana Mana on her film Foragers, Shanak Sen about All That Breathes, and Jacqueline Mills about Geographies of Solitude. And please be sure to subscribe so you don't miss more upcoming episodes from the ground at IDFA.